remember wearing flowers in your hair?
Did you buy a VW van to travel overland on the hippie trail to Afghanistan or India?
Did you stand shoulder to shoulder with your fellow protesters shouting, "Make love, not war"?
Here on Boomer Bedtime Stories, we take a deep dive into the adventures of a generation
that will make you laugh, make you cry, or just shake your head.
Wondering, how on earth did we ever get away with that?
Hi, I'm Karen Heeks, your host for today. My guest on this episode is Sam Cutler. Sam is a man who really embodies the energy of the 60s. He is one of those who has truly been where it's at when it's there. He reminds me a little of that quote by Tom Robbins, "When freedom is outlawed, only outlaws will be free." Prior to working with legends like the Rolling Stones and the Grateful Dead, organizing their tribe of 60 as they toured country to country, stories we will visit in a later episode, he was a committed member of the CND, the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, in England, initiated in part by Bertrand Russell. Today's Boomer story will take you to that time, when Sam was arrested in Scotland in a peaceful but dramatic protest, and found himself in one of Scotland's darkest and most brutal prisons, and how later he became one of Bertrand Russell's bodyguards. He is a writer and great storyteller, and man, does he have stories to tell.
Long before I was involved in rock and roll, I committed myself to the peace movement in Britain and became a non-violent proponent of direct action against the threat of nuclear weapons. In due course, I was arrested on an American nuclear submarine in the Gairloch, sometimes known as the Holy Loch, in Scotland, and spent time in Barlinnie Gut Jail in Glasgow, at that time one of the most brutal prisons in Britain. I shared a cell with the president of the Goebbels Young Socialists, who was in prison awaiting a trial for murder. At one stage, I acted as a personal bodyguard to Lord Bertrand Russell, who was elderly and rather frail. He was the famous philosopher and a man of serious convictions. Bertie, as he was called by one and all, was as sweet a person as you could imagine. To this day, I remain opposed to nuclear weapons and I remain committed to non-violence, the Buddhist principle of ahimsa. I remain opposed to war, and until the day I die, I shall echo John Lennon's immortal words, "Give peace a chance." One love.
The nuclear sub Patrick Henry surfaces off Scotland after cruising underwater for 66 days and 22 hours, a new record. More important, she's the first atomic sub to enter the Scott port of Holy Loch. And on the way in, she encounters a few canoe loads of pacifist demonstrators. Patrick Henry moors alongside the submarine tender Proteus, which was earlier the target of heated demonstrations. Carrying a full load of 16 Polaris missiles, the Patrick Henry packs more explosive power than all the bombs dropped in World War II. From the strategic base on Scotland's west coast, she'll patrol the northern sea frontier. First of the new class of vessels that has revolutionized today's concepts of sea power.
That feeling of being frightened hasn't really ever gone away since nuclear weapons were first invented, really. Like so many of us love to do, we confront what frightens us by burying it deep within our psyche and basically not dealing with it because it's too overpowering. It's like standing naked in front of a guy with a machine gun. What do? You know, when nuclear weapons became a reality for people in the West and in Russia and places like that, there were, you know, were people who were deeply, deeply concerned about this and tried to, you know, do something about it. She had great philosophers like Bertrand Russell and indeed Einstein himself, you know, warning the world that they created a monster. And that rubbed off on young people. It rubbed off on people as disparate as, you know, little old me. People like artists like Bob Dylan, who wrote songs about, you know, the masters of war. It even extended to, you know, crazy anti-bomb kind of exercises in primary schools, which I remember when I was about 7 or 8. So that would be 1950, 1951, 52, where children were encouraged to kneel under their desks in the event of there being a nuclear war.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover. This is an official civil defense film produced...
The horrible enormity of it struck many people, and those that were driven to action by it had to work out what to do. So I joined a pacifist group, which was supported by Bertrand Russell and many great intellectuals in England and artists. And it was a non-violent group to protest nuclear weapons. So what had happened in Great Britain at the time was that American nuclear submarines were coming to Great Britain with a weapon system, a new weapon system called Polaris. And they were in a base that was in Scotland, just near Glasgow, in a lock, a deep water lock that had access to the sea, to the Atlantic Ocean. So this was going to be a base for American nuclear submarines. We felt, we being young peacemakers, that the presence of nuclear submarines in England would inevitably make Britain a target in the event of any kind of nuclear exchange. So we didn't want them there. So anyway, I went on a march that went from London to Glasgow, which is about 600 miles. And we marched with some kayaks, which we drew, they were on wheels. And we walked all the way protesting the presence of the submarines and intending when we got to Scotland to launch the kayaks and try and stop the submarines coming into the base. Well, we managed to get a boat with about 20 of us in it, a bit large boat, a motorboat, which we went out to meet this submarine, and I managed to get on the submarine. And I never realised how huge they were. They're massive, massive things, you know. You kind of think of submarines as being small. They're not. The actual hull itself is maybe, you know, 4 or 5, even 6 stories out of the water. And around the side of the hull, there was a ladder, a steel ladder, and I managed to climb up this ladder and I found myself on the deck, and then towering above the deck, massively high, maybe, I don't know, 70, 80 feet high, was the conning tower of the submarine. And on the top of it, I could see 2 or 3 men looking down at me. They had what looked like a gun that they were pointing at me. I thought maybe they're going to shoot me. I didn't know what quite was going to happen. In fact, it was a water cannon, which they fired at me, and it was so intense, it just blew me straight off the deck of the submarine into the water. And I was picked up by police. There were police in boats all going around the submarine. It was all very chaotic. So I was hauled out of the water. I couldn't breathe, so I would have drowned if the cops actually hadn't arrested me. So they fished me out of the water, and I was arrested, and one thing led to another. Eventually appeared in the sheriff's court. This was a Scottish court. I refused to recognize the court, being very young, arrogant and foolish, and was sent to jail for a contempt of court, basically. I refused to plead. I refused to say whether I was guilty or not guilty, and they got very upset about it because I was about the 20th person they'd had that had done the same thing. So he sent me to jail. He'd had enough. So I arrived at Barlinnie Prison, which had been built in Napoleonic times, a couple of hundred years old. I was 19, I think I was. Yeah, I was young, young and foolish. It was very frightening. It was very, very scary. All the prison guards belonged to a military regiment called the Argyll Highlanders. Massive guys, 6'6". Big guys with red, kind of red hair. I remember them with very angry faces. And the first thing they did was like strip you naked and examine you. It was all very degrading. And then they assigned me a cell that was up. There was like layers of cells, and I was right on the fourth floor, right at the very end. And the prison officer, we call him Screws, opened the door and I walked in. There was a guy sitting on a bunk. He was on the lower level of two bunks. And he looked at me and he said, what are you in here for? In a kind of very broad Scottish accent. And I said, I started explaining to him, you know, that I was, I'd been arrested on the nuclear submarine. And he goes, oh, fucking Sassenach, you know. He wasn't very pleased about the fact they just sent an Englishman into his cell. It was like, uh-oh, this was a bit difficult. So I kind of rather lamely said, well, what are you in here for? And he said, I murdered my girlfriend with a hammer. So there was a long silence after that, needless to say. I was like, oh my God, what? Anyway, we started talking and he was actually quite a bright guy and his story was tragic. Like all stories that involve murder are tragic. He was a carpenter and he was going to get married and he was actually the president of the Goebbels Young Socialists and was quite a bright guy, you know. And he'd come home the night before his wedding and there was his girlfriend kissing some guy on the doorstep of his house. So he lost it, pulled a hammer out of the bag and there she went. So that was my introduction to a Scottish prison. And he was actually very kind. He said to me, well, if you're going to survive, I won't do the Scottish accent. I'm not very good at it. But he said, if you're going to survive in here, don't look at anybody. Don't speak to anyone and don't look at anyone. He said, when you walk around, look at the floor. Just make sure you don't bump into anybody. So I was there for a few weeks and I was actually very ill while I was there. I had a stomach problem. And I got no medical treatment for it. And eventually I was released. And that was my first experience of an English prison, well, a British prison. It was very scary in some ways, but you know, what don't kill you makes you stronger. So it was a strengthening experience. And I was released with no money. It was snowing, I remember. And I hitchhiked all the way back to London. Which you could do in those days, you could hitchhike. And it was freezing cold and I had no proper clothes or anything. I was picked up by a truck driver who gave me an RAF greatcoat, like the big overcoat that the guys in the British Air Force wore. He gave it to me. And we talked about, you know, my experiences and all that. And he gave me this coat. He said, otherwise you're going to freeze to death. And he dropped me at a place called Scott's Corner, which is a famous junction on the highway going down from Scotland to England. And I got frostbite in my fingers.
Wow.
It was so cold. And eventually got a woman picked me up, a woman in a car. I think she took pity on me. And she looked at my hands. She said, are you all right? I said, oh, my hands really hurt. They're aching. And we looked at my hands and these two fingers here were a bit black on the end. He said, oh, you've got to go to the hospital. So she took me to a hospital. It was very kind of her. I had injections in my fingers. And anyway, we survived that. Went back to London and became involved in the peace movement. And the peace movement at that time was being supported by Bertrand Russell, who's probably one of the most famous philosophers in the Western world. He's an old man, you know, he's in his end of the 80s. So he was old, but very sweet in a kind of highly intelligent. And of course he was a lord, you know, which in England counts for something. So there was concern that he might be attacked by right-wing people, violent people. So several of us volunteered as bodyguards for him. And I was one of those people. Basically, we just, God knows what we would have done if something had happened. We'd have put our bodies in the way. It was basically about as far as we got with thinking about how we would deal with these things. We were all very much committed to ahimsa, you know, non-violent. So we didn't think that we would do anything violent in response, the exact opposite. But anyway, as luck would have it, nobody was violent. He was sitting in the middle of a couple of thousand people who were sitting in the road outside at Britain's equivalent of the Pentagon. And so people couldn't really have got at him. It was more a symbolic duty than anything. I had some interesting conversations with him. And he was a horny old bugger. He liked all the pretty girls. And here I am now at his age, or almost his age, I'm the same way. What the hell? You can't. I mean, there's no reason why one should sit in a garden and not admire the flowers. So, yeah, bless him. He was a wonderful man. So here we are. We've come full circle.
Its passage will be duly noted on operational charts in the Pentagon in Washington, D.C.
Is this a scheduled deployment or merely a sea trial? By the time these observers know for sure, this Polaris submarine will be on station, hidden in the depths.
It's hard to imagine Sam's story. The reality of being shot into those frigid waters and finding yourself in an archaic Scottish jail with a murderer as your cellmate, and then working as a bodyguard for the brilliant Bertrand Russell. Sam continues to let freedom and love be the stars that guide him. If you happen to catch a glimpse of him in the Australian outback, panning for gold just to see what the fuss is all about, or out there putting the easy and easy rider on his three-wheel Harley, get out of the way. He's coming fast. That's it, Boomer fans. Just another fantastic Boomer bedtime story. Thanks for listening.
Do you have to be a Boomer to share a story on Boomer Bedtime Stories?
Absolutely not. You could just be Boomerish.
Or you could be a child, grandchild, parent, cousin, lover, or a friend of a Boomer. We'd love your perspective.
Or you could tell your favorite Boomer story for someone who could no longer tell it themselves.
After all, everyone loves a good story. And believe me, we Boomers had some groovy times.
Yeah, man, it was far out.
Just email us a synopsis in 400 words or less of the story you'd like to share and send it to stories@boomerbedtimestoryradio.com.
That's stories@boomerbedtimestoryradio.com.
Drop out.
Turn on.
Tune in to Boomer Bedtime Stories.
And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.